My mother always said that it's probably a good thing that I was not destined to have children because I would pay for my raising. But I do know that I am predictable enough that my children, like all children of all parents, they'd have been able to manipulate me well. Okay? Because let's face it, our children learn how to manipulate from the womb. And they're good at it. And they know how to get a certain response. Especially if we're upset about something and they're trying to kind of mitigate the reaction. Okay? So I know myself well enough to know, and my college students always knew, that I could handle anything as long as they were contrite. Or at least they acted like they were contrite. As long as they looked like they knew that there is a problem and they knew that they'd messed something up and they were sorry about it, we could talk our way and fix anything, talk our way through and fix anything. Okay? But if, on the other hand, they didn't realize that there was a problem, they were about ready to have a problem. Okay? Because that was the problem, if they didn't realize that there was something wrong. And it was then that we had to have a little come to Jesus talk. All right? That basically said, God isn't happy with this. I'm not happy with this. We've got to do this a different way. This can't continue. Sometimes that happened had to happen with what I referred to as the proverbial 2x4. Not that I've ever actually used a 2x4 literally on a person, but the psychological or the emotional 2x4 that says, I'm going to have to do something to get past your defenses so that you will listen to me. And the reason why I knew how to use a 2x4 is because one was used on me often enough. Okay? Again, not physically, but certainly emotionally. To say, you're not getting it. Now, I will tell you that that approach didn't always work. Because sometimes when I was using the force, the full frontal force attack, people would shut down. And I'd have to realize, wait a minute, this isn't working. That's how I learned how to talk a little bit about the issue of abortion on a college campus. Because if you're doing it from the stance that says, do this because I said so, it's never going to make a difference to perhaps a young woman who is tired of being told that she's not worth much. But when you can get them quietly to see that the same reason that nobody should be telling her that she's not worth much, that no one should be telling the little unprotected life that it's not worth much, then you might be able to make some progress. But just standing there yelling never really accomplishes that much. And so every situation's different and every person's different. But the reality is that from time to time we're called to nudge each other down the way of life. We're called to call each other to accountability. We're called to make each other better. That's what the church is for. Now, I know that there are some people out there who try to go it a solo way, okay? And some of them are absolutely wonderful people. I know some. But I'm telling you that I've always needed the church. I've always needed the wisdom of the church. I've needed the church to help keep me where I needed to be, to keep me kind of between the lines. Because sometimes, like everybody else, I didn't always get it right when I was thinking it through on my own. From time to time, I needed somebody else to bring about the wisdom of the group. I needed those grandmas and grandpas. I needed my mom and my dad. I needed sometimes those friends who had argued through a position earlier than I did to sometimes share that wisdom and keep me on the right track. You see, Ezekiel is being told by God that we have a responsibility, and we all do. That when God tells us to speak, we have an obligation to try to nudge somebody onto the right path. And God even says to Ezekiel, when I tell you to speak, if you don't do it, then I'm going to hold you responsible. He says, now if you preach and they don't listen to you, well, that's on them. But I've given you the message that says that you're supposed to speak a word of clarity, or to speak a word of improvement to the world, or to somebody you know or you love, and you don't do it, then I'm holding you responsible. That's what God tells Ezekiel. Paul warns us in the second reading that we have to be careful about the way that we go about those things. And Paul reminds us that really, if we do it all out of love, it's going to be fine. But if we do it out of, I'm going to make you feel bad, and I'm going to make you feel wrong, and I'm going to make you feel stupid because you're doing it the wrong way, again, will anyone listen? No. Will it be effective? No. What we have to learn how to do is to speak out of love. If we learn how to speak out of love, Paul tells us, that's all we're really going to owe to each other. We won't owe each other anything else if we can do it all out of love. And then he kind of says what I say all the time. Do we really need a commandment to tell us not to kill? Do we really need a commandment to tell us not to steal? Do we really need a commandment that says that we're supposed to love each other? And rarely do we get into the big time of these things, but what about the small ways that we encroach on that law when we start talking about somebody? Sometimes we need our moms to say, look, if you can't say anything nice, then just don't say anything at all. You know? Sometimes we need our moms to tell us that and to remind us of that. That's the church. That's us nudging each other onto the right path rather than onto the wrong path. But how often sometimes do we just join in rather than stop it and reverse it? And that's just one little example. You see, in the gospel, Jesus again sets us up to remember that we're caring for one another. And he tells us that we can't live with enmity between ourselves. He always says, if you've got trouble with your brother or sister, then go settle it with that person alone. Wouldn't we be a whole lot better off if we did that with most of our things the first time around? We went directly to the person instead of to somebody else first? Yet that's what we're called to do. But do we do it? Just try to work things out, brother to sister, brother to brother, sister to sister. Can we do that? How often do we try? And then he says, if that doesn't work, well then get one or two other people to come along with you to help nudge that person. And then he says, and if that doesn't work, then tell the church. And if that doesn't work, then treat him as you would, just not a member of the family. Treat him like a Gentile or a tax collector. Now, that doesn't mean that you can abuse the person then. Because have you ever read in the scriptures anywhere where Jesus said it was okay to abuse the Gentile? Or to abuse the tax collector? No. It just means that you can't expect as much out of them if they're not a member of the family. Then, this next section of the gospel, we always remember when Jesus said it to Peter, okay? Because he's standing up there holding those keys, all right? But he also now says it to the whole church, and everybody forgets this part. That not only did he say it to Peter, but he says it to the whole church today. He says, whatever you held bound on earth shall be bound in heaven. But whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Which one of us wants to have our stupidest moment held against us for the rest of our lives? Which one of us wants to have our worst moment be the thing that everyone defines us by? Not a single one of us. And that's why we're called to forgive the trespasses of others in the same way that we're willing to forgive them. Jesus is telling us to get rid of whatever binds people, to let them go free. And then he finally reminds us that wherever two or three of us are gathered together in his name, that he's right there in the middle of us, and that he hears our prayers. Now, all this is really good in theory, but this week again, it came home to rest in my life where I had to put it into practice, and that's where suddenly it gets a lot harder. This week, we received word again of an abuse case that occurred here at St. Peter's back in somewhere around 1948, 1950, a little more than 10 years even before I was born. But there was a visiting priest. It was not one of the pastors or resident priests, but it was a visiting priest, a passionist by the name of Ed Vedder, who, the accusation has been made that he violated against kids at St. Peter's School. It was our only grade school here in Joplin at the time. And he was here doing mission work, and he used that opportunity to get near our kids. And there's an 80-year-old man who lives in Kansas who finally, in his 80s, has finally said, I know there were others. I know it just didn't happen to me, and I still hurt because of this. And he came forward and he told his story. And now we're trying to give him some help at healing for something that happened to him when he was 10 or 11 years old. And he's never talked to anybody about it. And now finally has brought it to the forefront. And we're able to help him start to try to heal. I don't know what it is about when it happens anywhere is one thing, but when it happens here, even if it was 10 years before I was born, this is my place. And it affects me even more strongly every time I hear of something that happened here. So I was very angry. And I began to take up my 2x4 and to seek out Ed Vedder. He died in a car accident when he was in 1977. But I began to seek him out and I began to use my 2x4. And I began to pound at him a little bit. And I said to him, by God, you will spend the rest of eternity praying for the healing of all the things you messed up. You affected lives. And you're going to spend the rest of eternity trying to make it up to these people, to make it up to the church for what you've done. And I went at him pretty good. And then I felt God tugging just a little bit on my ear. Because, again, I had to remember that I want justice and that I want healing. But that whatever I'm going to hold bound on earth is bound in heaven. And what is my real job? To loose on earth what I can. I know at least some moments, Ed Vedder's probably still in the timeout chair. How can you not be when you're trying to fix all that? But I did finally remember to put my 2x4 away. And I did finally ask God to bless him. To bless him and enfold him in his love. That's still hard. It's very hard. And I've never been abused in that way. And I imagine it's quadruply hard for somebody who's suffered in those ways. But I believe in the merciful, bountiful forgiveness of God. And I have to pray that God can fix on the other side what we may not be able to get fixed on this side. And so I've continued to ask God to bless him. And I've continued to ask the offender to pray in blessing for those that were hurt. Where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Let it be so in our reconciliation. May God give us the grace to fix what we've broken.